How much of the of the change in Congress, the increased partisanship that exists today, it might be attributed to the fact that the caucuses seem to be more homogeneous than they used to be? That you don't have the Northern liberals and Southern Democrats or Southern conservatives in the Democratic caucus, and you don't have that spread of liberal and conservative in the Republican caucus?
I think it's a contributing factor. Yeah. I think there's not no one thing. It's the fact that the lifestyle of members has changed. The coming into Washington, not just a few from surrounding states, but from all over the country, members have their families at home. They come to Washington. They have a small basement apartment sometimes, or they otherwise stay here for a couple of days and then they go home again. And so the opportunity to get to know their colleagues is very difficult compared to what it once was. For example, in the days when Bob and I were serving, members would often have activities together. Bob mentioned playing golf, or they'd have children that were involved in soccer, or in now it would be soccer, then it was more likely to be swimming or something, and they shared experiences. They went to did social things together, and they got to know each other. The big problem now is that we have two largely anonymous groups of members who come in and leave, and the parties have been strengthened by the state legislatures so that both Democratic and Republican districts are very much more geared to the incumbent members who are serving. And that makes it very unlikely that things will change in an election. Another whole problem that we have is Congress. Now, neither Bob nor I wanted to see a huge turnover every 2 years. But if there's not a real opportunity for change, then that leads to periods of time. I think, frankly, the Democrats were in power in the House too long. Mm-hmm. Bob Michael was there for over 40 years and was never actually in the majority. Right. And
the highest number I had of Republican members was 192.
Yeah.
Of course, then if we won something by my being able to cajole some on your side, you know, come join over. Us thoughtful people. Why, we'd win one during those Reagan years, you know.
There's nothing wrong, by the way, with the House having an agenda which is pushed through. The House is the body where, with the Rules Committee, the Speaker, and the majority leadership have a right to advance the program of the majority. That's not the question. The question is how it is done and whether there are opportunities for the minority to participate in debate, to give additional insight and thoughts to the legislation, to contribute to the legislation as it's formed in the House. But I think when I was Speaker, we sinned. We made some mistakes. But I think now it's advanced another a mile or so that things that would have been, I think, unthinkable at the time that Bob and I were in Congress are fairly routine. Conference committees meeting first with a majority and reaching a decision, then inviting the minority in and taking the vote, that sort of thing. So there probably needs to be some reconsideration of how the House is conducted. It's a different body than the Senate. The genius of the founders was to have in the House of Representatives the so-called people's body, elected every 2 years, responsive to local constituencies and concerns, and the Senate representing the states. And over our history, it's worked pretty well, I think. But it constantly needs to be refreshed and re-examined. And there is a danger, I think, particularly in time of war, where the House and the Senate together can be subordinated to executive power. We have a history of Civil War, but World War I, World War II, where power flows to the executive branch. It's still important for the Congress to do oversight and to provide its role as a check on executive and judicial power.